Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh, Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game.
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni. Float game for the win. Taylor's gone. Goodbye. Touchdown, Indy.
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in aboard to another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Hope everybody's doing well on this Monday post July 4th holiday. Greg Rakestraw joining us as well. Greg, how are you, sir?
I'm good. The background looks a little bit different today. Are you a world traveler this morning?
Somewhat, yeah. Sneaking out on a quasi-vacation where you still work. So whatever kind of vacation that is, I'm trying to take one of those.
Well, I tell you what, then we will have a production meeting on the air. When I joined you a couple of weeks ago, it was from the lake house in Michigan, and that was my working vacation. I am lucky enough in a couple of weeks that I will be on a vacation where I'm going to say, hey, bud, I need to take a week off from the show. So since I'm lucky enough to get two vacations this summer, one of them was the working vacation. I will have a you need to reach me by telegram vacation coming up in a couple of weeks. So just as a heads up, know me on the show a couple of weeks from now.
And very deserving, as much as you keep going. Trust me, I know, I understand. But and how hard is it because I know for me, but you have so many more things that you are working on that ISC is dealing with. How hard is it for when you are trying to do that? I know what it's like on my end.
You know, we're lucky enough now that there is the old joke was the sun never sits on the British Empire, and the same thing for ISC. You know, we have maybe a gap of 4 or 5 days that a given production during the course of a calendar. So there are now five of us that are full time with ISC, and we try to rotate around when people are taken off, going to be away, et cetera. This is the time of year, end of June, early July, where, for example, we'll have the IFCA North-South All-Star Game coming up this weekend, which is the big high school football All-Star Game every year. 6 weeks until the start of the high school football season, folks, by the way, as of Friday night. We'll have a couple of productions that we are doing coming up on Saturday afternoons. This weekend is busy. But for example, like we had a 3 or 4 day stretch this past week, we didn't have a single production. So, for me, I am on the countdown now to the start of Colts training camp, which really more or less is 2 weeks away. I will miss the first couple of practices with the vacation I have coming up. But by the time I get back, it's Brickyard weekend, it's Colts training camp, and what I call the start of the sports fiscal calendar is officially underway.
Yeah, and plenty coming up. You just mentioned the Brickyard, which is only a few weeks away at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, NASCAR coming to town. They were just in Chicago, and Van Ginsbergen, man, Shane Van Ginsbergen, with another win. Not only another win, he swept Chicago, and this is the second time he's won Chicago, his second win of the season. So it's going to be interesting to see what he can do there. Chase Briscoe from Mitchell, Indiana, very successful on road courses. He's done well there, so that'll be interesting as well.
Correct. And the thing is, and again, it's a shame, but it kind of is what it is. You know, the Brickyard was such a big deal in this town for the first 10, 15 years that it was here. And it coincided with kind of the dip in the Indianapolis 500, you know, after the split, you know, for about a decade, where frankly, the Brickyard, I wouldn't say was the bigger race, but seemingly was kind of the bigger cultural happening. And now, Jim, It is very transactional. And part of it is just kind of the change in NASCAR. Part of it is the reemergence of the Indianapolis 500. One of the big issues that NASCAR has to deal with, and I get it, but everything in NASCAR revolves on the television contract, which means that dates for races are often fungible or flexible. You know, you're always going to start with the Daytona 500. Sometimes it's different weekends. You know that Charlotte is going to be the Coca-Cola 600 on Memorial Day weekend. Other than that, dates and weekends kind of tend to move a little bit. Well, here, that race has moved around so much. Now it is kind of back to what has been the traditional, was the tradition of either first weekend in August or the last weekend in July. But I think the fact that the race moved around so much from a date perspective, and that the 500 is kind of regained locally, you know, it's never going to be the snake pit days of the 70s. But my goodness, there were 300,000 people that were at the track, you know, on race day. It's the Brickyard is one of those things. It's like, oh, it's Brickyard weekend. Okay, great. And by Monday, oh, we missed Brickyard weekend. All right, let's go on to Colts training camp. That's kind of the status that it has now. I don't think anybody wants to see it go away. It's just very much in their box that gets kind of checked on the list on the calendar, so to speak.
Yeah, and that year that they had the real bad issue with the Goodyear tires, that didn't help things at all either.
No, it didn't.
And then they've moved the race from the oval to the road course, and now they're back to the oval, which is where they should be, although it's not the greatest track made for NASCAR racing. It's a unique situation.
Correct. And the other thing that NASCAR runs into here that is atypical anywhere else they go, they're not the biggest show coming into town. And again, because they're not the history of Indianapolis 500.
Greg's signal bouncing out there a little bit, and he'll come back strong as soon as he does.
Now, sir.
You got me, buddy. Yeah, you're back.
Okay, good. Sorry about that. I'm driving through the wilds of Marion County, so my apologies that my signal went away. But the point that I was trying to make was basically that, you know, it's not the biggest show when it comes to Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Nope. Not by far.
Early in the days of NASCAR, the guys were so appreciative of being there, and there were so many events, and there was such an effort made to say, hey, we're thrilled to be in Eagles. And guys now say the right things because they're close to the right things. But this weekend is treated just like any other NASCAR weekend where it's like, hey, we're the big deal in town. And most folks here don't care. And they remember what it was like in the 90s, early 2000s. And now it's just another one of 36 events. And that's not what folks are used to around here.
And not only that, you think about the names that were there in NASCAR. There's been such a youth movement. You had Dale Earnhardt, you had Tony Stewart, you had, the kid from Pittsburgh, Jeff Gordon. And those are just those names, and then many other names that were still racing in NASCAR. NASCAR had the big names then, and now it's been such a youth movement that they've lost virtually all of their, you know, you've got Denny Hamlin and Brad Keselowski, and maybe there's somebody else, but the names are gone. Dale Earnhardt Jr. is gone. Harvick gone. All these names that were there are gone. And I think that plays a huge role into it.
I think to some degree as well. But again, it's so much about being here is, again, because you have to be more competitive here. And again, the other cars that are here go about 30 to 40 miles an hour faster on this track than do the stock cars. And again, people recognize that, realize it. So again, it's one of those things, hey, we're happy we have it here. I think the folks from NASCAR appreciate being here, but it strikes me almost as a marriage of convenience at this point, Jim, that we have a Brickyard 400 in Indianapolis, and not something that honestly either side puts in the time to celebrate properly.
Lots of truth to that. The Colts return to Grand Park for their upcoming fall camp. And when does that get started?
So move-in day for the rookies is the 21st. Move-in day for the veterans is the 22nd. First day of practice is the 23rd. So this is the quirk in the calendar where Labor Day is so early. We actually have preseason football, not for the Colts, but there is a preseason game in July. The Hall of Fame game is on July 31st. This is about as early as the NFL season will start, which means that the majority of NFL training camps are underway. Like, some rookies are reporting as of next week. And the two teams in the Chargers and Lions that are playing in the Hall of Fame game, I think their full team is in camp next week. That's not the case in Indianapolis. And Indianapolis has always brought the rookies in just a day before. Some places bring them in a week before. That's not been the case here. But basically, Jim, what you can set your watch to is whenever your team has their preseason opener, usually you're in camp a couple of weeks before that, and that's the case for the Colts. So August 7th is the preseason opener against Baltimore. Camp really starts July 23rd in earnest for this football team.
Yeah, and so we've got that, and then we've got college sports to look forward to as well. High school will follow that. Everybody is really looking forward to the college football season, especially, you know, IU fans are excited. Colts are looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with their quarterback. Who is going to be the quarterback?
Well, my money is on Daniel Jones. And it's not just the shoulder injury, although that clearly slows down Anthony a little bit. But in the last couple of years, the tie was going to go to Anthony Richardson. You know, you wanted to play the young quarterback, and he is still exceedingly young. But I think everybody realizes you're at an inflection point in this franchise. You know, you're at a time where you need to win. And I don't think anybody has expectations of this team being an AFC championship level team. I think it's, hey, you need to be a playoff team. That's not happened since 2020. You need to win a playoff game. That's not happened since 2018. You need to be competing for a division championship. That hasn't happened since 2014. And again, is Daniel Jones a great quarterback? He hasn't been. But is he the better quarterback right now? Maybe the early indications in minicamp and OTAs is that he just might be. So we'll see this competition starts to play out officially 2 weeks from now. But again, right now, my money's on the guy that I'll be wearing number 17, that he would be quarterback one whenever that determination is made by Shane Steichen, et cetera.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think that that's going to be a race, but Anthony Richardson still dealing with a shoulder injury on top of that as well. But it'll be exciting to see what the Colts can do with what they have with making that adjustment, and I know the fans are looking forward to it as well. Then lots of other things going on in the fall, as I know you guys are going to be getting ready to fire up the ISC sports machine for football. You just mentioned the All-Star game coming up. Is that the old Shriners All-Star game?
That is correct. And again, what that now is because of players getting on campus early from a Division I standpoint, about 15 years ago, you would see the D1 kids playing the game. Now it has turned into, you will see occasionally a Ball State kid that might be a preferred walk. I won't be getting there until August. You'll see like the FCS, the Indiana State kids. It has become like the D2, D3, NAIA junior college all-star game, which is still a very high level of football. And the way that game is set up, there are 10 different regions in the Indiana Football Coaches Association. You have to have the same number of kids from all 10 regions. You also have to have representation from 1A through 6A. And so occasionally you'll see three kids from one high school. Sometimes it's two. Oftentimes it is just one kid from one school. Because again, there's 98 kids that play in the game, more or less. There are 315-ish football-playing high schools in the state. It's a fun game. They basically are together for 4 or 5 days to practice. And, Jim, there are a handful of kids that this last competitive football game that they are going to play. They're going to college and not play football, going to the working world, et cetera. So for the group, you know, after playing their last competitive football game in October or November, they get one more shot at it. A lot of friends and family get together for this game, and it's kind of the high school football summer reunion, and it's also the turning point because you know after this game, the season is not too far away.
Yeah, that's crazy. This has been just a great year in the Indianapolis area with sports. It has been nonstop. The Pacers carried us through the summer in a great magical run. And now there's nothing slowing down because you've got stuff that you've had continue to go. The recruiting has been crazy for especially for Indiana football. They're a top 25 class. And now we're not that far away from fall camp starting. Indiana plays basketball in Puerto Rico next month. It's nuts. So it's been a nonstop cornucopia of sports in the state of Indiana.
And normally what would be the downtime here obviously got shrunk by the Pacers. Don't forget the WNBA All-Star game is here in a couple of weeks. So yes, even when there has been downtime in years gone by, this is a 24/7, 365 kind of year. And that's a good thing for those of us that are involved in the sports business. That's for sure.
And the Colts now, they when their fall camp opens up, they have one of the great open camps for the public, for the fans to come out to, and fans have really taken to that camp.
Yes, they have. And honestly, there are not that many, you know, teams that do completely open training camps anymore or that do a camp off-site. That number is, frankly, as teams' facilities continue to get better and better. You don't have the need to kind of go away. And I would hope this trend continues for the Indianapolis Colts, but that is just one of many things that we go with the passing of Jim Irsay and with the three daughters now in charge of the show, you know, is their view on this going to be the same, or are they going to go, to more of a, you know, camp, you know, on their own premises. One of the things that Chris Ballard has talked about, I know it echoed the comments of Jim, was basically we liked having the players in a, you know, it's not a dorm, it's a hotel that they basically rent out, but it's still, we like having our players in one building together and not just for workouts and not just for meetings, but to truly have that experience. And so given how good the facilities are at Grand Park, I would hope, and again, what you said, given the fact the number of fans that turn out to watch practice, yes, we're talking about practice, but they come out by the thousands. I would hope this is a tradition that continues in Indianapolis for a long time.
Yeah, and I think that it will. I there's no way you can't see that and appreciate that because that's part of Indiana. Long has been talked about how well the Colts fans are. They have from the beginning, and they haven't wavered, even though there's been so much up and down in the last few years, especially with the quarterback situation, but the fans have been there and stayed there.
Correct. The only issue that the Colts run into, and again, frankly, they don't train all that long at Grand Park. The last day is the open practice against the Packers on the 14th for the second preseason game. That'll be the end of camp. What you run into is school getting started, you know, and so you have these pretty massive crowds the first week or two. Well, by the time you get to the second week of August, everybody's back in school by that point in time. So they have tried to tailor this around the local academic calendar. So not surprising, the last open practice is August the 14th.
Well, what's up next for you, brother?
IFCA All-Star Game coming up on Friday night, Indy 11 Soccer coming up on Saturday night. But, I am trying to take in as much downtime these next two or three weeks as possible, knowing that once I get my feet back on the ground for Colts training camp, then I kind of know what my calendar looks like for the next several months.
Yep, you'll be running. You'll be the running man when the feet
hit
the ground.
Hopefully I'm the Arnold Schwarzenegger version of the running man, that I win the game, not the other guys, not the last season's winners.
There you go, buddy. Well, we greatly appreciate you as always.
Talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Greg Rakestraw from the ISC Sports Network. Make sure you go check that out. It offers a cornucopia of sports from around the state of Indiana that you could watch, look into, and many other things as well. So, Fulton, good morning to you as well, my friend, hitting us up on the hotline. We appreciate each and every one of you guys. We appreciate all of you that are here with us now. And we've got lots more coming up. Looking forward to talking to Zach Browning a little later. We'll catch you up on all the things that happened over the weekend with Indiana football commitments, more commitments. They get a big-time get and an edge rusher that kind of replaces one that they lost in a flip to Florida State last week. So they lose one, but I think they gain something possibly a little bit better. And now they're bumping up to a top 25 class, but we'll talk more about that and plenty more from the Hard Truth Eagle Point Studios right after these messages. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company's mobile studios, I should say, as on the road this week. Hope everyone's having a great day. Had a great weekend. How was your 4th of July weekend? It seemed to be pretty good everywhere. Hope everyone had a fun one and enjoyed themselves in a safe manner, of course. No, Fred, that was just a mistake. Handful of former Indiana basketball players will be active as the NBA Summer League gets underway. I think it got underway yesterday. I have to check that for sure. But Jalen Huccifino, Khalil Ware, Umar Ballo playing, Miller Kopp, and Tamar Bates are set to play in the NBA Summer League in Las Vegas, looking for a spot to strengthen their position within their league or earn a roster spot for the upcoming season. Of course, it gives people like Khalil Ware, it just gives him more experience, and that's what this is for. They want him to get as many minutes as possible because they've got plans for him, and he had a great year, and they like to see him get more. He just needs to play more. And this offers a way to do that, but it's fun to watch. I mean, because these guys are fighting for spots, because they're fighting for whatever, they're all fighting for something, whether it's more minutes currently on a team or to make a roster spot or find a new team somewhere. They're all working for that. So that runs from July 10th through the 20th, features all 30 NBA teams. It includes recent draft picks, G League players, and international players, serving as a key evaluation period ahead of the fall camps. People like Jalen Huccifino, he's the 2023 first round draft pick, of course, by the LA Lakers. Played last season with the Philadelphia Philly 76ers on a 2-way contract. Appeared in 13 games toward the end of the season. Averaged almost 8 points per game. His best performance came March 16th in a road win over Dallas. He had 19 points, hit 5 3-pointers. He added 18 points in a March 30th game against Toronto and just had other decent games. But he played one season for Indiana in 22-23, helping lead the Hoosiers to the NCAA performance. With his best performance, a 35-point win over Purdue. But you've got Ware, the 7-foot center. And like I said, he is just – I think they're just getting him as many minutes as possible. So, Bill asking, when is the Bahamas trip for IU basketball team? Well, they're going to Puerto Rico August 5th through the 12th. I'm sure that's what you're talking about. But, yeah, they have a trip to Puerto Rico set up to play some teams down there for 3 games. They'll play down there for between August 5th and August 12th. And there's an opportunity. It's odd. Indiana fans will have the opportunity to see Indiana basketball before Indiana football, which is kind of funny, but it works out that way. And it's an opportunity to go down to a nice place, have some fun, watch some basketball, see what the team is going to be like. It'll be interesting to see how many fans take that up on that, because as of right now, those games are not planned to be streamed, to my knowledge. I don't know why they wouldn't do that, but, man, I'd love to be able to do it. Let me have the opportunity to do it. I'm sure that there would be quite a few takers. But Heath asking, is Cooper Flagg playing in the Summer League? That's a great question. I don't know if they're going to have him play in that or not. Sometimes they'll – not want to do that just because of health reasons, but I that's a great question. I don't know. I'll have to look that up. But I would think that maybe possibly just to get him introduced to this is not the NBA full on, of course, but it's a level up. You are playing against guys that are in the NBA as well as many others like himself that are moving in that direction. So that would probably be something that happens. I don't know, but a lot of the times when those guys do play, it's not very much. They just get them in a little bit, get their feet wet, and mainly because you've got all these other guys that are fighting so hard just to make it in the league. They don't want to take a chance on injury and things like that. And that happens time and time again. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, lots of former Hoosiers in there, and you can check that all out. But it's always fun watching as well. So I'll be watching. Indiana, speaking of basketball, they offer another offer over the weekend. This one goes out to 2027 class member LJ Smith, who is another 6'4" combo guard. He's at Lincoln Town High School in North Carolina. A lot of guards, man. Almost all of the offers we've seen, it's guard or a wing, guard or a wing. So you have undoubtedly a full understanding of what type of team, Indiana team, you're going to start looking at. It's not that they're not going to have bigs. The reliance on bigs is gone. Previous, under Mike Whitson, that was the concept, the reliance on the big. Everything started and stopped with the center position. The ball had to go in there. You are not going to see that. So it's going to be shooting, getting up and down the floor, and a little bit more exciting play, I'm certainly going to say. But you can check all that out at thehoosier.com, of course, where they have all that information there, everything up to date that is going on. And you might as well get yourself a subscription, because thehoosier.com and On3 has acquired Rivals, which Rivals is going to stay Rivals. We're going to use that as a lot of recruiting aspects, but it's definitely the place to go for information on what the heck is going on. And I hope that all you fans that really love to do that would get a subscription to thehoosier.com and support those guys. You can get one for $1 for the first month and 50% off of the entire first year. Just go to thehoosier.com. What else is going on for you? How was your all's 4th of July weekend? I hope. What did you do? Did you hang out? Did you go to the lake? I know several of you have hit the lake. I saw a lot of comments on that. Some are still out of there. So I hope you're enjoying it as well. It's been nice. I hope the weather has been nice where you have been also. Later on, we'll talk to Zach Browning and we'll get you more caught up on everything that went on over the weekend with these offers and commitments, as Indiana, as I mentioned, landed a massive commitment in football with picking up an edge rusher that basically replaced what they lost in the flip that happened a week ago. So we'll talk about all that as well. Ronnell Johnson is who I'm talking about. Not only is it's a giant pickup for a number of reasons. He had just visited places like Ole Miss, Missouri, Kansas State. That's a big get. And congratulations to Coach Buddha Williams, in addition to Brian Haynes and, of course, Kurt Cignetti, as that defense continues to be solidified with better and better players. And I talked about this last year, that Indiana is, look what they're doing now. And it's going to get better because as their prowess on the field is recognized, then they are going to be recognized from a recruiting standpoint. And they now are. That's why they're starting to land these guys. They believe in what Indiana is going to do. They believe in the coaches. And they also know that the coaches can probably get them to that next level. That's going to be coming because something else, Pro Football Focus is something, if you don't follow as a sports fan, you should. It is a wealth of information when it comes to the sport of football, and they have all kinds of things in there that relates to the college game. Definitely something I would recommend you following. And right now, they just put out their top 50 players in the country. Didn't matter position, it's just the top 50 players. Indiana had three in the top 38. Doesn't sound like a lot. Think about this. This is of all of the college D1 football teams. All of them. Indiana had three in the top 38. Now, there were two teams that had five each that led the way. And I don't know how many had four, but I'm going to guess this is still up there in pretty good company, that this is a high level. Indiana is now bumping in to the big boy territory. Last week, I think we talked about the All-Americans, Walter Camp All-Americans. Indiana had three on that list, I think. We're one of only five teams to pull that feat off. So that's the air they're in. And those other five teams, I think one was Alabama, Texas, things like that. That is where Kurt Cignetti has already elevated this program to. I mean, obviously, you make it to the college football playoffs, and you're knocking boots with the big boys. Andy says Huff is an interesting signing. Yeah, we'll talk about that as well. And let's see, Mikel Camara was one of those. Elijah Surratt and D'Angelo Pons, of course, was one of those three in the Pro Football Focus. Indiana is, I'm really excited to watch and cover them this season. I keep saying I think this is a better team. They are a better team, and they are, I think they're hungrier. They're not satisfied. You get a taste of something big, and it not only does it not go well, but it leaves a bad taste in your mouth because of how it went, how the perception was. And I think that is, you have to have that as an athlete. And I think most athletes do, because that's the grind of competition. That's what drives you. That's why the guys that play golf until, you know, the older ages, you got to have a little bit of that competition in you. But these guys got to have a high level of competition and continue to climb. Fred hopes for IU to get a bowl game in Florida. Well, most people are probably hoping for Indiana to make it back to the college football playoffs. And as am I. It's just a cool thing. But I do say, when a bowl game is kind of cool, because you're planning for it all the way up. It's going to be a big deal. It's going to be, and if Indiana were to be in a bowl game this year, it's going to be a hell of a bowl game, because I cannot imagine them losing less than nine games. I mean, winning less than nine games, which would put them in a very high end football game probably on January 1st. And, looking forward to seeing how it turns out. But I fully expect them to be bumping up for a spot in the college football playoffs. They're good enough, and we'll look forward to that. What's IU basketball going to be like? Boy, that's a great question, because nobody knows, really. I don't know. I'm not going to pretend to tell you I do. I've got a great indication. I've said I think they're going to be in that bottom or the upper 10 of the league, but I think they're going to be in the bottom of the upper 10. But that's not a horrible place. That's if you're in that top upper 10, you're most likely going to make the NCAA tournament, dependent upon how, I mean, that's not a given right now. As of last year, I can't remember how that went. Obviously, I don't think the Big Ten got, did they get 10 teams in last year? Just nine. So it's that's kind of a Mendoza line right now with the depth of the Big Ten. But if you're in that area with what's in front, with teams like Illinois and Purdue and Michigan State and Michigan, UCLA, and whomever else may be good this year, I think that they'll be able to fight themselves into that level and make the NCAA tournament, which is of great importance. That's of great importance, I think, for Darian DeVries to make the NCAA tournament this year. I think that's the most important thing for him as far as the program, getting the program back on track. I think that would send a signal to these recruits, although I don't know that they're going to have a problem recruiting, to be honest with you. I really don't. I think that they're going to be able to recruit, period. Not just based on winning, not just based on what they've done, because they haven't been able to do anything yet. And we see how recruiting is going already. They've landed a great one, and a lot of high words coming from recruits as this process will continue, of course. But I wouldn't be surprised to see another higher profile commitment for Indiana happen before the season starts. We'll certainly find out. But, and if that does, that puts them in, that puts them in cruise control as far as recruitment goes. You'll be ahead of the game because you'll be halfway home to the class I think that you'll want to take. I really don't think you'd want to take more than that in a class. But we'll find out. Indiana football, like I said, continues a strong holiday week on the recruiting trail. Saturday, the Ronnell Johnson, that was just a massive commitment because that replaces, you know, they just had the kid that flipped to Florida State, and that was a big loss. Well, this replaces that, and I think it even adds a little something to it. And you got Indiana's football recruiting, I got to tell you, has been tremendous. It's not that they're landing all these five stars in this yet. That will happen. That is on its way. And you want to talk about a massive change. We know, you know, last year when Indiana goes from being Indiana to an 11-1 college football playoff team, that nothing is, no one, we have never seen anything like that in college football, to my knowledge. And it's not, that's not a blip. It's not only going to continue, it's going to get stronger. Indiana has become a player in the game overnight. Crazy, but great. But the recruiting is masterful. I hate to blow smoke, but Kurt Cignetti and his staff, and you got to give credit to Kurt Cignetti overall because he's the head man, has done exactly what he said he was going to do from the moment he got here. They have hit every one of those nails right on the head. The recruiting has been outstanding. The guys that they've gone after, it is Kurt Cignetti and his crew have an unbelievable way of identifying talent and developing that talent. That's why you don't have, I don't think you have to see a rung of five stars for Indiana to be successful. And if you want to doubt me, which anybody can doubt me, that's natural. Ha ha. But like I mentioned earlier, their Pro Football Focus, those top three of the 38 players in the country, those were all James Madison guys. You know what that means? They were all ranked probably, I don't know, 1, 2, 3 stars, maybe no star. But these were mid-level guys. All three of them are going to play in the NFL. Plus, you got Aiden Fisher, probably going to play in the NFL. So it's, they do a great job of identifying talent and developing that talent. Bob Bostad on the offensive line. I'm the coaching staff on both IU football and basketball right now is as good as it has ever been at one time, ever, I think, probably in the history of Indiana sports. That's just, as I look over things, obviously football, it's never been like that. Never been like it is right now across the board. All of the coaches and all the positions are tremendous. The coordinators, tremendous. You've got a coordinator that you're going to be lucky to hold on to as long as you can in Brian Haynes, because he's one of the nation's best, and he's a wanted man. You look what he did with that Indiana defense last year. Expect more of the same this year, and I'm looking forward to watching it. But this is Indiana football turning guys into great players that were not supposed to be. I mean, if you get a 5-star, yeah, he's supposed to be good. So that's not really developing much. Hey, we've got to take a little quick break. We've got plenty more coming up. Zach Browning will join us on the program and our good friend Dustin Napieric as well. I hope everyone having a great day, great post 4th of July weekend. Plenty more coming at you. Back with it from the Hard Truth Mobile Studios right after these messages.
Welcome back to the Hard Truth Silly Company Studios on this post July 4th Monday. Glad to have you along. We'll be joined by our good friend Dustin Napieric in the next segment as the Pacers fill their void at center. I look forward to talking about that because it's a little different. It's going to be a different look next year. They pick up a dude that can shoot the three ball. He shot over 40% last year, so we'll talk more about that with Dustin Napieric as he joins us. And then Zach Browning will come along and we'll get more in depth into the recruiting hits and gets over the weekend. But Indiana, again, like I said, picking up that great edge rusher to solidify their defense. That pushes them into right up to a top 25 class. I mean, they're treading into, I keep talking about all these things that they've done, but they're heading into new water. So interesting to see how that will go. And I looking forward to seeing it all come together, because that just means Indiana football is going to be around as a solid team, and not just a solid team, but right now looking like an upper level team, because I'm hoping to have Steve Wiltfong on the program with me tomorrow on Three's national football recruiting director. And he also has a prediction out right now for Indiana to land a major get at quarterback, a 4-star quarterback. And we'll talk about that later as well, but it's all just going up for Indiana football on the recruiting side of things. And it's only going to continue because the players like what is going on. Indiana also now has rev share, so they are on par with a lot of that. Just boosts them up a little bit more, and it keeps them, other than the programs like Michigan and Ohio State and those level that have been to that level for a long time, they've been bringing in the dough, man. So they're not going to be on equal footing ground NIL-wise with those programs probably for a long time, maybe never, because of what they are able to put into it. I mean, oh my gosh, these schools that are monstrosities, they make so much money on football. Like I've said before, on Michigan, I think that they make as much on their first three home games as Indiana would in a season. And it's because their stadium is twice as big. They charge for everything. They charge media parking. It's all about everything. And no, I did not hear about the Chinese spies at Michigan, Rudy the Boxer. You'll have to tell me more, but we'll have to wait for the next segment because we've got to take a break. When we come back, hopefully we'll be talking to Dustin Napieric, and we'll talk more about the Pacers filling up that need at center as they pull in that final piece. Back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on the other side. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this post July 4th Monday. I hope you had a great one. Dustin DePirik, the Pacers beat writer for the Indy Star, joins us now. How was your 4th, my friend?
Good, man. Got home. My family always does a thing for the 4th. So my used to be my aunt used to host it. So now my parents are hosting it. So we got back there and got to help them out with that a little bit. You know, pretty good turnout on the 4th. Got to see some high school buddies on the 5th. So that'd be Saturday. Drove back yesterday.
Is this in Yinzer country?
It is in Yinzer country. Yes. Yes. Right in the midst.
Anytime I can just use the word Yinzer, it's a bonus.
Yeah, exactly.
I should start a contest, as a matter of fact, for people. Mm-hmm. Anytime I say Yinzer, you just send in a comment and I put you in a drawing.
Yeah.
The Dustin DePirik sweepstakes.
Yeah, send you some Hermanni sandwiches or something like that. You look like you got some color, man. Where are you? What are you doing?
I'm on assignment.
Right, okay, gotcha.
I'm on assignment.
I can see. You look like you're deep undercover.
Yeah, deep undercover. Still working, but right. On assignment. Yeah, a lot of right. Hard work out in the sun. You got to go out in the sun and work. But I made the mistake of not using sunscreen on that first day and then falling asleep.
That'll get you.
That'll teach you. That'll learn you, as my dad would say. That'll learn you. I love that. I used to always love that. That'll learn you. Speaking of learning you, might as well get to the Pacers. They filled a big hole with a big dude, man.
Mm-hmm. They did. Well, yeah, the hole is bigger than the dude, I think, still. Certainly a nice, you know, like, I think definitely have seen people saying, well, you've got to trust, you know, Kevin Pritchard and Chad Buchanan, these guys, considering the moves that they've made. And you do, you know, basically they've done a really good job of making smart moves, of shrewd decisions, of being able to sort of pick up stuff on, you know, the bargain rack, if you will. And, you know, that's what they did with Jay Huff. Basically, obviously, we're able to get a guy who doesn't make enough that you had to send a player and, you know, a guy who can do the pick and pop stuff and also the shot blocking that Miles Turner can do, maybe not at the kind of established level, but obviously really has only been played one year as a rotation player, where Miles Turner has played 10. But Huff, you know, really picked it up, you know, for Memphis. And certainly they, you know, they can only use him so much when you've got Jaren Jackson and you've got Zach Edey. You know, he only has so much of a, and they just picked up Jock Landale. So they don't really need him. And the Pacers were able to prime away for a second round pick and then a pick swap. And so, but he's, you know, a nice player, you know, per 36 numbers are really good from a shooting and blocking perspective, or scoring and blocking perspective. He was over 40% from three last year, I think 81 out of 200. So that's a pretty nice number. You know, you tee him up as a pick and pop guy, and that allows you to kind of maintain your spacing. And so at the moment, you would think he's probably their starting center. There's still some things they need to figure out in terms of if Isaiah Jackson hasn't signed his qualifying offer yet. You know, doesn't seem to know what they're doing with Thomas Bryant yet. You know, haven't seen much on him. And, you know, they've picked up Tony Bradley's qualifying offer. So, you know, like, he's certainly a guy they could trade if they wanted to, or waive if they wanted to, but basically he's in the mix at the moment. So it's at least an addition. It's at least they've done something to address, you know, the obvious hole filled by the departure of Miles Turner. But it's, you know, it's worthwhile. I mean, I think they needed to get a guy, a center who can shoot, because that maintains the amount of movement, the amount of the kind of spacing that they're looking for. And, you know, I mean, certainly they could still use Jackson as kind of a rim running threat, you know, coming off the bench and whatnot. And certainly he's got to, you know, they've got to figure out what he's going to be after an Achilles tendon tear. But Huff, just having a guy that they can reliably, step out and shoot it is a big deal.
Yeah, and so this does not completely fill that hole, like you said. Yeah. But so what do you do? I know you've saved a lot of money, obviously, mm-hmm. which that was the reason of not re-signing Miles Turner. Rudy says it would have cost them $45 million. I'm not sure if that number is exactly right. But
not a year, no. No.
But, is how do they get out of this to where the reasoning, if the reason was for not spending X amount of dollars, then right. How do you get out of this with spending the amount of dollars you want to, but still keeping yourself in line with players equal to?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, at the moment you can't. At the moment, there's not really an option there. I mean, you can, but it's going to cost you a player. So that's kind of the issue. I mean, I think it wasn't going to cost him $45 million. I mean, I think it, you know, obviously, his average annual value on his contract with the Bucks is 27 million. I think it's 26.75, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, so they, I mean, I gotta redo the math. It's 4 for 107. So like there, the savings doesn't give them the opportunity to sign a player at that level. It's 26.75. Like, because they're over the salary cap. So you can continue to re-sign players at whatever level you want to when you're over the salary cap, but you can't go get someone else's guys at the same level. Basically, what you're entitled to once you're over the cap and before you hit the taxpayer, before you start paying a luxury tax, is the non-taxpayer mid-level option. And you can pay up to $14.1 million for somebody under that. And so, you know, obviously that's nowhere near Miles Turner money. That's making a little bit more than half of what Miles Turner was making. So they could have made an offer for DeAndre Ayton if they wanted him. I'm sure they made an offer because it sounds like they at least called about him, but the Lakers were able to get him. It sounded like the Lakers were kind of at the forefront of those negotiations the entire time once it became clear that Ayton was going to be waived. So they didn't get, you know, stick their nose in there. You know, Al Horford is another guy that you would think they could at least call on, but it sounds like the Golden State Warriors have been on the inside track as far as he's concerned. Obviously, free agent coming out of Boston, but I mean, he's 39, so you're not giving him more than a 1-year deal, presumably, you know, 2 years at most, if you're, you know, trying to take him into his 40s. And I think he's still a useful player. I think Boston still got a lot out of him, but that's certainly not a long-term solution. You know, we're talking about a guy who's 39. So what they're most likely, I mean, there's a good chance that Jay Huff is the best player they get. And you sort of hope that, you know, next year is better, or maybe you get a draft pick there, or you just kind of, you know.
Well, hell, they keep giving the draft picks away.
Yeah, no, they do, but they have their, they got this pick back, you know, in 2026, and they traded their 2025 first rounder for, you know, before Halliburton was hurt. They traded that pick to get their 2026 pick back. And so this year, you know, so if they have a bad year, you know, they have a chance certainly of landing a pretty good pick. So there's that possibility. I mean, I couldn't tell you right now, what big fits where, at this point. Certainly it's, you know, it's a whole, got a whole season to go and see what everybody does in college and, you know, what everybody does in Europe and everything like that. But that's kind of where they're at right now. You know, there's not a whole lot of options on the board. Certainly there's a possibility of a trade, but that requires them to put somebody on the market to send somebody out. And because there's only, you can only take so much salary in before you have to send a player. And it's like, you know, that Jay Huff makes, I think, like, I don't know if he even makes $2 million, you know, per year. And so you could pick a guy like that up just for draft picks, but you can't get it. You can't, you know, if you're going to go get a $20 million player, you've got to send out $20 million worth of salary, or at least close to it, 17, 18, somewhere in that range.
I'll do it for half.
You can't do it. Yeah, I know. You would gladly. I too would gladly post up in the NBA if you would give me $5 million. I'd be happy to do that and take all the injuries involved. But I don't think I'd be able to give you 20 and 10, you know, not so much, I don't think, in that league.
Yeah, so, I'd try.
I would too. I would give you everything I could to give you 20 points and 10 rebounds, but I feel like I'd struggle. I think that maybe I would be ultimately hindered in that regard. So, yeah, there's not a lot of options.
Are you saying you're vertically challenged?
What's that?
Are you saying you're vertically challenged?
Somewhat. If you call 5'8 vertically challenged, I would say so.
In the NBA, I'm pretty certain that falls under that category.
I would think, especially if you're trying to play center. Yes, exactly. Yeah. I think maybe that I'm not physically suited for that particular job. But yeah, I think it, you know, if they want to, you know, if they want to package Ben Mather and Jairus Walker together and send out two former lottery picks and go get somebody who makes $16 million. They could do that. But I don't
know. So what do you think their next move is? I mean,
Maybe not much.
I know that, like you just said, I'm not asking for that scenario packaging these, but they have to do something because they don't have the draft to fall on.
You would think they don't. I mean, they didn't have a draft this time, but I mean, they can eat it. They can just decide to deal with what they have and let the chips fall where they may as far as this year's record and take advantage with that draft pick and hope that it's a center. You know, I mean, that's a possibility they can do. They can just believe in Jay Huff that much. That's another option, and believe in the combination of Jay Huff and Isaiah Jackson and Tony Bradley and believe that's enough to get them by. It's hard to say. We get to talk to Kevin Pritchard, or at least somebody from the executive office, later today. And so start to ask these questions and get them on the record, in public and see what they say. So I'm going to be intrigued what we hear from him, because I don't know, what their options on the table are, what they're willing to do, because really what we're talking about here, in terms of what the problem apparently was, is they apparently didn't want to go very deep into the luxury tax, or at least didn't want to touch the first apron. It seemed to me that it was pretty clear that Miles Turner was going to cost you over $25 million to keep him. And that if you wanted to keep him for sure and just get, because they called him his first their first priority. If you wanted to get that done with the same level of speed that they got the Siakam deal done last year, it was going to cost you at least $25 million if it wasn't going to cost you $30 million. And they obviously never put that offer on the board because he left for $26.75 million. So, if that's where they're not willing to go, but they also don't have cap space, they don't have a lot of options. And they were willing to stick with that negotiation, trying to keep it under whatever their number was. And let everybody else walk, or let everybody else sign somewhere else while they were doing that. I mean, if they were going to say, hey, Miles, we're not doing this for any more than 23, take it or leave it, the time to get that done would have been in the first couple of days after the finals. If you were going to set a hard line and say, like, Miles, if you want 25, you're going to have to get it someplace else, then they should have been ready to be done with that by a couple of days after the finals and say, okay, this isn't going to work for us. We're moving on. We're going to look at somebody else that's going to be a cheaper option. They're going to be able to fit in that non-taxpayer mid-level, and they obviously didn't do that. So they were very clearly on their heels a little bit. I mean, considering how on the heels there were, Jay Huff's not a bad addition, it's kind of impressive work. But there's not a lot of option on the table unless they want to make a move. And I don't know if I don't know if they're ready to trade Ben Mathurin, and I don't know if that's the smart move at this point for whatever you're going to get. Basically, again, you'd have to go get somebody who makes about, packaging Mathurin and Walker together, it's about $60 million of salary. And so, that's not a top of the line center either. That's somebody making less than Miles Turner does. So you're trading two guys that were lottery picks that obviously have a lot of, a lot of value for a guy that's, a middle of the pack at best, or probably bottom 10 center, out of the starters in the league. So, that doesn't necessarily fix your problem either. And you're giving away two talented guys. So you probably end up selling them for, 50 cents on the dollar. You could trade out Obi Toppin if you want to, but that's another guy who helps solve your forward problem. I mean, he obviously adds some salary to the mix that allows you to kind of swing a little bit bigger. But again, that's another piece that you like, that's given you something, that adds a lot to your style of play, that lets you run the way that you want to run. And you have a guy who finishes when you're playing in transition. And so is that a guy that you want to give up, is that somebody you want to give up if you're in scramble mode and just trying to get something to fill a hole? I don't think so. I mean, certainly there, you would have to be, if you're going to be willing to part with somebody, he's kind of your luxury item. But you, if you're going to let him go, you want to make sure you're getting someone that's a pillar, that's somebody that you can really trust. And that you're going to believe is going to be a core piece of what you do next. And so, you know, I don't know if that gets it done. So, I mean, you still got to be smart with that piece too. So, I mean, there, I'm not going to tell you that there's no big trade out there. You know, they've certainly surprised people before. I don't think anybody saw the Halliburton trade coming. And the Siakam trade was masterfully done considering what they did to make that work. Getting him for, draft picks, obviously. But, you know, Bruce Brown was the best player they traded. And that was a heck of a move. So you don't want to undersell Kevin Pritchard on what he's been able to do with these guys. But in the same way, at this point, swinging big for a center costs you pretty big assets. And this might be the biggest move they make.
Yeah. And I'm sure that Tyrese's injury really had nothing to do with.
Oh, it certainly had. It had to.
Well, I was going to ask, someone else mentioned that with him, him going down and it changing next year, because you know you're not going to have him next year. And that was a big financial hit that they were going to have to take. And so that tells you that they're not very confident that they're going to be as strong next year.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, they haven't paid the luxury tax in 20 years. So, you know, they haven't gone over that barrier in 20 years. And obviously, it's been a rising salary each year. And they are very highly invested at this point. But, you know, if you re-sign Turner, you know, that like you were certainly going to go on the luxury tax, you might get up to the first apron. Now, the first apron is only punitive when it comes to moves, but it does make it a little bit harder to make moves. And you want to be close to what, you know, you want to be close to having your core if you're at the first apron. And if you're at the second apron, you really got to have your guys, because they make it really hard to make moves at that point. I mean, you can't aggregate salary, so you can't trade two guys for one. If you want to, it's got to be kind of even up. And even if you do a multiplayer deal, they kind of got to match. It becomes harder to do anything. And so you really got to believe that you have the guys that you need. And then, you know, Boston is finding out, you know, how much it hurts to be a second apron team when you have a guy hurt. So they've had to let some guys, you know, certainly had to get rid of Drew Holiday, and make some moves to start to come down and shave off salary, at this point when they have a major injury. So you don't necessarily want to be up there. And if you decide you want to extend Ben Mathurin, you might head toward that situation. I'm gonna answer this question from Caleb in a second. I will. What do you want to hear from Pritchard? I think, you know, where were we on that? So basically, they would have been having to pay the luxury tax for the first time in 20 years and do it for a team that they weren't certain was going to be, you know, at a finals level. I mean, I think they still would have been relatively safe as a playoff team if you run back a lineup that's Andrew Nembhard at the point, Mathurin at the two, Nesmith at the three, Siakam at the four, Miles Turner at the five. You still have TJ, Obi, you know, Ben Shepherd coming off the bench, and some other pieces there, you know, Jairus Walker, Johnny Furphy, and those guys. I think that team still gets you in the playoffs, you know, and I think, you know, a whole year of Nembhard playing point guard, you know, raises his level a little bit offensively, and he's still going to be the defensive guy that you need. You know, I think all those pieces together, you still are I don't think you're a championship team, but I think you're a playoff team. But obviously, and then you keep the bridge going and saying, all right, like, you guys just hold down the fort. Tyrese will be back in a year, and you make another run at it, you know, and that's the price. That's the tax that you're paying to believe in yourself in 2026, 2027, believe that you can get back once you have, you know, your all-star face of the franchise back in the fold. And instead what you're saying is, okay, well, we're not willing to pay that tax for a team that can't make it. You know, like, it seems a little bit short-sighted to me, or, you know, but it's also saying, I guess, that you don't think you're going to have the same level of Miles Turner by that point anyway. You're not sure what level of Tyrese Halliburton you're going to have. So it still remains odd to me that it's like, okay, well, I'm willing to go to $23 million, but not 27. You know, it's like, what's the difference? You know, like, when it comes to that, it's like, either you want to keep this team together or you don't. You know, like, I get not wanting to go to $35 million. I get not wanting to go to 40, but nobody was talking about 40. You know, like, nobody was talking about it at that level. Like, again, I mean, I guess you've got to pay the tax, and that maybe gets you over to a total investment at that level. But you're not giving Miles Turner $40 million. I mean, you're talking about, like, 30 would have cleared you. 30 would have put you in a position where nobody was going to touch you. And, you know, they're obviously shocked. I mean, a big reason why it happened in the first place is nobody thought they were going to, you know, Milwaukee was going to waive Damian Lillard to clear out this space. And the Bucks still have to clear out space to make this work. I mean, they haven't announced that signing yet because they've got to, you know, clear out some other salaries to make sure that they can get this, you know, that they can be under the tax enough to add Turner officially. But, you know, like nobody saw that coming. I get that. And they were trying to slow play, you know, clearly trying to slow play this thing. What I want to hear from Pritchard is, you know, like, I don't know what they'll tell me as far as negotiations concerned. But I want to know everything that they'll say, you know, like what did the calculus change dramatically? Did you intend to put down a, you know, not a, you know, Godfather offer sounds like a lot, but did you intend to put down an offer that you knew he wouldn't refuse before Halliburton was hurt? You know, did you try to get him under a lower salary line because Halliburton was lost? You know, did, you know, ownership change its mind as far as how willing it was to go over the luxury tax at that point? And, you know, obviously he might not answer those questions at all, but I want to ask. But, you know, then after that point, it's okay, what do you do now? How do you view this differently? How do you view, you know, your path? You know, you had a pretty clear, you know, you obviously were operating with a pretty clear understanding of who you wanted to be, up until this happened. What do you do now? Who do you think you are now? And what does that have to look like? So, you know, I mean, that's the big picture question. Obviously there's smaller picture questions. Okay. Like what are you doing with Isaiah? What are you doing with Thomas Bryant? What are you doing with Tony Bradley? You know, what else do you think you need, at this point? You know, but what are, you know, how do you view your path differently now? Is the point. So is the question I want to, you know, get the big picture answer to, because I don't know, you know, I'm very interested to see what they had to say. And I want to ask a question of, you know, how they built this team to this point in the first place and how they feel like they created a new blueprint, what that looks like. So, yeah, you know, I'll be very interested to see what that, you know, what he has to say, what he doesn't have to say. Kevin's very interesting, where like Chad Buchanan is very close to the vest. You know, Kevin tends to actually let you know what he's thinking. And so he'll be smart about what he says and doesn't say. Yeah, you know, I'm going to be very interested to see what that looks like.
And you can find out what all that was and Dustin's reporting of it at the Indy Star, where you should be a subscriber, because you need to keep local papers alive, all different kinds of forms. Be a subscriber, a digital subscriber like I am. There's all kinds of ways to do that. We've got more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios, and we are back with it all and much more right after these messages. The Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday, post July 4th Monday. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope the weather turned out to be good. How was the weather up in Indy?
I wasn't in Indy. I was in Pittsburgh.
Oh, that's right. How was the weather in Pittsburgh?
It was good. It, you know, kind of touching up on 90, but not overwhelming as far as the heat and humidity was concerned. So that was good. You know, got, you know, high 80s, you know, on the 4th. So that was nice. You know, worked out. Wasn't too hot, you know, but it was sunny. It was nice. So, you know, no complaints. Good 4th of July weekend, I would say.
Well, that's good. The NBA Summer League getting underway, man, and a lot of Indiana players playing in it, but a lot of other players just of interest. But one of those is former Indiana players, Kel-El Ware, who Miami is, my assumption is, just getting him as many minutes as you can get him.
Sure,
And that's because he had a great rookie season, and I think that he's somebody that they see big things in the future, and they just want to get him some more minutes. He's right. Just played that one season, and he probably won't play a lot. Don't, like, when they send guys up like that, they don't play them fully just out of risk of injury, I think, or will he play the full run, do you think?
I would say no one plays the full run is the basic way to put it. In the sense that you more or less, like, you kind of stagger more or less, I guess is the best way to put it. So like, you know, usually your best players or your top rookies or whoever, the people that you want to preserve, play maybe 2 to 3 games tops, you know, and then you start kind of digging in and letting your G League guys, you know, go, because you're also trying to make, you're making your downwind, you know, roster decisions. You're trying to look and find out, you know, because like a lot of these guys are guys that are certainly, that are certainly going to be in the G League, you know, the you're playing guys who are on Exhibit 10 contracts, the guys that you're going to be paying, you know, a $75,000 bonus is going to be their big, you know, salary deal. So you want to see what they look like, you know, you want to get a sense of like, okay, what else, what all do you have here? But you do want to put on the show, you know, for the first couple of games. And obviously the entire point of this, you know, summer league is, you know, the biggest thing about it is letting the rookies play and letting you see, you know, the top draft picks for the first time. You know, that's what everybody comes to see. Obviously, I'm not going this year. The last time I went was Wembanyama's year, and they filled that place to the brim, you know, when Wembanyama, you know, was there. It was such a big deal. You didn't have a great first game. And obviously, certainly he has lived up to all of the billing that that everybody had for him. You know, it was that's the selling point. So you're trying to make sure that at least the first couple games, you're getting those rookies the opportunity to play. I think, you know, the last lottery pick the Pacers had, I think Jairus Walker played 3 games, if I'm not mistaken. And I think he played 3 last year. You know, he came back because he didn't get a whole lot of playing time as a rookie. So he played last year. I would think Ware will play 2 in Las Vegas, but they're also playing, you know, Miami's playing in I can't remember which other summer league, but there's the smaller summer leagues that start this week. That's, you know, I think everything in Vegas starts Thursday, but you can go, there's one out in California that's kind of a smaller league. So I can't remember where Miami is, but I know
I'm surprised they don't have these in the same place, like Las Vegas. I'm surprised they don't have these in one place, like in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is the big one is in Las Vegas, you know, and that's where everything is, but it's just like, if you want to pick up a couple more games on the way, you can do it. And it's like a couple other spots signing up. I think it used to be totally separated. It used to be Orlando and Vegas. And I think they did it, you know, like it was too dramatically, you know, like you picked one or the other, like it was kind of a split, as I remember correctly. And then, you know, they started really more heavily investing in Vegas as kind of the NBA, like it's obviously NBA sanctioned, but like, you know, like NBA Summer League is the league's deal. You know, I mean, like you go down there, like everything, your credential is done by the league. You know, all the press stuff is done, you know, by the league, like everything is sort of handled, through the Central League office. And, you know, they're all down there and the whole, you know, NBA communications team is there and everything. And like, that's their central operation, for the week. And their everything else is kind of a sideshow, but it takes up some television inventory. You can go there on the way if you want a couple more games for your guys, you know, like, certainly like they've got the California Classic. So that allows, you know, the teams out there, you know, the LAs always play, you know, and it sort of allows them to kind of play each other. And I think Miami usually goes down there too, for whatever reason, but it's not, you know, like that's an addition, you know, like, Vegas is the main event. And when you get to the 10th, everybody's there. Like, it's not like you can't be doing something else instead of Vegas, you know, like you're doing Vegas. You can do something on top of it before, but you can't not be in Vegas, basically is the thing.
And there are a wealth of different guys. Jalen Huccifino playing as well now with Philadelphia, and was probably a great – it was funny. That trade was made fun of because when he got traded, part of the Utah trade. And he got
cut, yeah.
It was like, why was that even part of the trade? I still don't understand, if you're trading somebody to a team and they're going to cut him, what does that do?
It's salary.
I was going to say, is it money
top? Spots, salary. You know, I'm trying to think who all was part of that. But yeah, I mean, like you see these, like, why did the Durant trade have to be 7 teams? You know, like that stuff, like it gets to be like a game of Tetris. You know, it really does, in terms of like, where you have to move, like you have to find you know, you got to find a hole to put this thing someplace, and then another hole to put that thing someplace. And it's like, you've got to clear salary, or you've got to clear a roster spot, or you've got to clear this, or you've got to clear that. Like, you know, the Pacers, you know, like first year I was on the beat, I can't remember, like Jay Crowder got traded as part of, I think he got traded from, I think, Phoenix to Milwaukee. And as part of, like, I mean, I think it ended up being part of the Durant deal that sent, you know, Durant from Brooklyn to Phoenix. You know, it ended up being like a 4 or 5 player trade, and everybody had to move some pieces to make this work. In some cases, it's just, you got to get, you know, it's 15 roster spots, and, you know, you can't do much else with it. So they had, the Pacers had to take on, they got Jordan Nora, George Hill, and Serge Ibaka for no players. They didn't have to send anybody out, but they had a couple open roster spots. You know, they had traded Goga Batadze for basically nothing, or released him or whatever. So they had a couple spots open, but they had to cut James Johnson. And then they cut Serge Ibaka to bring James Johnson back. And so that's the type of stuff that's just sort of, you know, like roster stuff that you have to do to kind of, to move things around, to make these deals complete. Like, they, you know, last year, as part of the Siakam trade, they had to go get this point guard and send him to somebody else to make the salary work. And, you know, the guy's name escapes me, but, you know, like that kind of thing. Sometimes you trade, you know, a guy you have the rights to in Europe that you haven't ever brought over, that you've traded 5 or 6 times, that might be retired. You know, the Pacers just traded, Mojave King is part of their draft pick deal, you know, last week. And Mojave King hasn't spent a single moment in a Pacers uniform. So all of this stuff happens just to try to open things up, to try to make things work on paper between the cap, you know, like all of the CBA machinations, roster spots, money, you know, all of these things have to be, you know, you throw things in. And for, you know, like for, it made sense for the Lakers to move off of Huchefino so they could get him off, you know, get him elsewhere, basically to get him more of an opportunity. And there wasn't one with Utah, but there was one with Philadelphia. I mean, Huchefino got to play some real minutes for Philadelphia last year because they didn't have anybody, because everybody was hurt down the stretch. And they obviously sort of decided it was best to tank that, you know, basically tank that season. They got the number 3 pick out of it, and, you know, VJ Edgecombe. And so that worked out pretty nicely for them. And so it all works out, and Huchefino gets another crack at, you know, having a more real opportunity to make a team. So, you know, and some of that stuff works out, you know, sometimes, I mean, it's an opportunity league. There's only so many spots. There's so many opportunities. You can get stuck behind somebody and never get a chance. But you can go someplace else, and have an opportunity. And that doesn't even necessarily mean that one team is better than the other. You can just get stuck behind the wrong guy and never get a chance. But you can go find an opening for somebody who needs a backup point guard, and you end up staying there for 10 years. So, you know.
Like, he looked like he played his best ball that he's played, sure, in the NBA when I saw him at the 76ers, and getting that opportunity. A couple other players that all unique, Ballo, Kopp, Tamar Bates are going to be there. Now, I think this is Miller Kopp's second run through. He was like the top 3-point shooter in the G League last year, or on the G League champion. So it'll be interesting. I think that once you've gone this far, unless all of a sudden you get take another leap up, it's just going to be hard to crack onto a roster with all, because you constantly have the new players coming in from college.
Right.
Now, Umar Ballo, that's going to be an interesting situation to watch, because he's going to be a hard dude to handle for a lot of those guys playing this. But what does that really mean in an NBA sense?
Right. I mean, they're going to have a hard time getting up out of the G League. But, you know, that's not a bad life. You know, you can make pretty good money doing it now. It used to be, you know, the salary has gone up, so you can make a living for a while in the G League, and then, you know, eventually you kind of run out of opportunity there, because they're circling, like you said, young guys in, and those roster spots don't tend to be very, it's hard to stick someplace, in the G League, but you can stick in the G League for, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, somewhere in that range. And then,
Man, I hope he didn't lose Dustin, because I was going to ask him about his thoughts on Aaron Rodgers as the quarterback for the Steelers. Hopefully, Dustin can make it back on with us. But that was going to be my ending question. Very curious to see how that's going to work out, because, man, that is something different than what we have seen from them. But Pittsburgh with a good quarterback, that's what we're used to. Hey, we're going to take a break. Up next, Zach Browning is going to join us from thehoosier.com, as it was a huge weekend for Indiana football. We'll talk about that and lots more on the other side from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. I hope you guys are having a good day, and we're going to rejoin you right after these messages. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday, post July 4th Monday. Zach Browning from the Hoosier.com joining us. And I don't know if I'd call this breaking news, just off of the press from Joe Tipton from On Three, of part of our Zach, that Tay Kenny, top 20 recruit, Tay Kenny has set an official visit to Indiana and to Texas. So Indiana, again, continuing. I'm impressed with what is going on with Indiana basketball recruiting and football as well, but basketball right now, because they've got nothing to show. You know, they've got nothing to sell as far as, you know, in the vault. They're selling a vision. They're selling a promise. They're selling of, hey, here's what I can do for you. And that's a hard sell in today's game, today's market, today's business world, whatever you want to call it, because these guys want proven stuff. But Darren DeVries and company, they are seemingly to breaking through those walls regardless. Zach, and sorry, welcome aboard, man. I didn't even welcome you. Got jumped ahead of that, man.
No problem. Happy to be here, Jim. But yeah, Tate Kenny expected to visit Indiana from August 29th to 31. So it'll be a late August visit for Kenny. I think he'll probably make a decision somewhere around that late September, early October mark, sometime probably around his high school season, right before it starts. But yeah, Indiana basketball, it's kind of what Indiana football had to do last season. Kurt Cinetti came in and was pretty much having to deliver promises to these guys and say, here's what we want to build. We need you to come in and help us actually build that. And that's kind of what Darren DeVries is doing now. These guys are coming in and Darren DeVries is saying, this is how I want to play. This is the culture I want to instill. And now I need you guys and this next crop of guys, this team currently, and then the 2026 guys he's currently recruiting, I need you guys to come in and help me deliver on these promises. So it's a little bit interesting, but it's also kind of a little bit freeing if you think about it. It's kind of like a blank slate almost. You can kind of just do whatever you want. It's, you can take it any direction you want. You can play however you want. He's got a little bit of film that he can go back to, what he did at Drake, what he did at West Virginia. He can look at those things a little bit. He can kind of show, here's what I've had my guards do in the past. He's got his son, Tucker DeVries, who is kind of that bigger guard. Tay Kenny, also a little bit of that oversized, bigger guard, probably not as big as Tucker DeVries, but he can show these guys that are coming in, these bigger guards, they're like, hey, here's what my son did. Tucker, he's been pretty successful in college basketball. We have kind of the same vision for you. So there's things he can sell these guys on, but you're exactly right. It's a little bit of a blank slate. It's much more promise than really proof so far than for what DeVries is trying to sell these kids on.
Hey, if you're following on social media, make sure you hit that like button for us. We'd really appreciate it. And the selling point is that this is what his offense is going to be. And this position is kind of the featured position. I mean, it could be the two or the three, I guess, depending, but or maybe there's not a featured position, but it sure seems like these are the guys that are most coveted for this offense that Darren DeVries is going to run.
Yeah, I think the point guard, the distributor, I think that's where really the fulcrum of the Indiana offense. It will be the centerpiece of the Indiana offense. You won't see the point guard, whether it's this season and it's Tayton Conaway, Josiah Drake, whoever it is, Jason Drake running the point guard this season for Indiana. You will see probably not 15, 20 points per game, but you will probably see 5, 6, 7 assists per game. And I think that's really the big thing. If you're Indiana and you are going to, as Darren DeVries has said, he wants to do, shoot within the first 12 seconds of the offense, you're going to need a point guard that can spray the ball out there. If you're Darren DeVries and you promised elite shooting and wanting to spread the floor and take 20 to 25 to 30 three-pointers per game, you're going to need an elite playmaker, an elite ball handler to spray that ball out to the shooters. And that's what Peyton Conaway is figuring to bring for Indiana this upcoming season. And that's what Darren DeVries is likely promising to guys like Prince Alexander Moody in the future, Tay Kenny in the future, these top-tier guards. You're coming in to be the centerpiece, be the focus. It's your job. It's on them to come in here and spread that ball around, get it to the shooters, score themselves as well. But it's that type of player that Indiana needs and what Darren DeVries kind of wants in his system. He needs that guy that can spread it around to those shooters. If he's going to have four or five shooters on the floor, you have to have a guy that can not only get into the paint, but get in the paint, penetrate, collapse the defense, and kick it out to those open shooters.
What does this say to big guys, though, that are looking to potentially come to Indiana? They've got an offer out to a seven-footer. But if I'm a big and I'm looking at this right now, I'm saying, man, am I going to touch the ball?
It's weird. It is interesting because you think about it a couple of ways. A, Indiana doesn't currently have a seven-footer, but you got to remember, this is still college basketball. You still need a seven-footer. You still need to rebound the basketball. And I think that's kind of what, if I was Darren DeVries, the message would be something along the lines of, hey, we don't have a prototypical 6'11", 7 foot, 7'1" center right now. That's why we need you. I think that would kind of be the message to a recruit. Like, you are our guy. We couldn't find anybody in the transfer portal this past offseason that was our guy, that 7 foot kind of stereotypical prototype defensive guy and rim protector, but you are our guy. And I think that would be the selling point if I was Darren DeVries, kind of make that kid feel special because he's different. He's not exactly what Indiana has right now. And I think you still need that. I think in an ideal world, Darren DeVries does have that rim protector, that offensive rebounder, that guy that can go clean up the glass, set great screens, roll hard in the basket. He's a lob threat a little bit too. I think Indiana might have that a little bit in Sam Alexis. I think he is a really good rebounder. He's probably not an elite rim protector. He's probably not a super dangerous lob threat. But I think Indiana kind of has what they want in centers. They have the guys that can go get rebounds. They have the guys that can go defend. Maybe it's not blocking 3-4 shots a game, but they have those guys that aren't necessarily guys that need to score 20 points a game. If you look at Indiana centers, Sam Alexis, Josh Harris, Reed Bailey maybe a little bit different because he's a much better playmaker. But if you look at Josh Harris and Sam Alexis, those aren't guys that need the ball in their hands every single time down the floor. And I think that's kind of what Darren DeVries wants in the center. He doesn't want a guy that needs plays drawn up for him on the block. He doesn't want a guy that needs kind of pick and roll situations to go score. He wants guys that can go make their own shots, create their own happenings, and create their own opportunities, whether it's on an offensive rebound or cutting and things like that. So I think Indiana has what they want in center. I just don't think it's the exact 7 foot type of center that a lot of Indiana fans want.
Yeah, I mean, it's not about want. I think that once you see what the product is, then you'll understand. I think there's probably just curiosity right now why I asked the question. I kind of knew the answer, but I'm sure that a lot of fans are wondering about that. But hey, the fact that the type of talent that is looking at Indiana, again, without having anything in the background, that just really impresses me what they're able to do. But I'm not surprised because we've talked so much about how good of a staff he has put together. And this shows you exactly what I'm talking about, or you're talking about, when we say they have a great staff. That's why that's part of the big reason why they're able to do this.
Exactly. You got to think about it. If you are a kid from the DMV, if you're a kid from the East Coast, you know who Kenny Johnson is. You might even already have a fantastic relationship with Kenny Johnson. That's a big leg up. That can kind of make up for the fact that, you know, this is Indiana and they don't really have anything to, as we talked about, kind of sell you on at this point. There's not really a lot of productivity at Indiana that Darren DeVries has been able to put onto paper and put on film. Obviously, Indiana hasn't played a game under Darren DeVries yet. But if you're Kenny Johnson, you have that connection. If you're Indiana, you have that connection. You already have that leg up over in the DMV. If you're Indiana, you already have that leg up with kids from this state, from the state of Indiana, because of Drew Adams, an Indiana elite. If you're from Indiana, if you played an Indiana elite, even if you didn't, you know who Drew Adams is. You know who the Adams family is on an Indiana basketball kind of situation. A lot of, if you're a really highly touted national guy, you probably know who Ron Clark is. He's a really respected recruiter on a national level. A lot of these guys have been recruited by these assistant coaches when they were at their previous schools. I know that Prince Alexander Moody, his conversations with Kenny Johnson started when they were at Georgetown. Same with Latrell Almond, who's a top target for Indiana. They met Kenny Johnson when he was at Georgetown. You look at guys, Jason Gardner Jr., he knew of Drew Adams when he was still at Cincinnati. So Flory, Badunga, obviously he didn't end up transferring to Indiana, but there was a strong relationship there before Drew Adams was even at Indiana. It was when he was at Cincinnati. So you look at these guys have connections, and that's exactly what they're bringing to Indiana. They're basically bringing all of their connections they had, whether it was at Tennessee, at Cincinnati, at Georgetown. They're bringing all of these connections, and they're bringing them to Indiana. And I think that's where you kind of build that foundational piece. You, once you start recruiting a kid, you can kind of build the foundation on the relationship. You can kind of say, hey, I'm Kenny Johnson. I know we've known each other for a long time. You know, maybe let's think about getting you on campus. And then once you get a kid on campus, once you kind of schedule that visit, that's when Darren DeVries can step in, and that's when he can close. That's when he can kind of sell these kids on what he wants his vision to be at Indiana. But it starts with the assistants. That's kind of where the first points of contacts typically are here on the recruiting front. So when you have guys like Kenny Johnson, Rod Clark, Drew Adams, when you have these types of assistants that are so well connected in the recruiting circles, it really, really helps on the recruiting front.
And speaking of recruiting, nobody is doing a – well, I shouldn't say nobody, but Indiana football is doing as good a job as has ever been done for Indiana football. Of course, that's no surprise because we have seen nothing but betters, the best ever in Indiana football over the last year and a half. But as far as recruiting goes, that – this recruiting season has been great for Indiana, and it has continued with a top near the top 25 class. They added a three-star wide receiver in Walker Bryson last week and a big get and a four-star edge in Ronnell Johnson, who really not only replaces but probably adds to the loss they had of the kid that flipped from Indiana to Florida State up from the edge.
Yeah, the kid from Florida State, that was a defensive back, but Ronnell Johnson is still, yeah, no problem. But he's, Ronnell Johnson is the real deal. That is a four-star guy. He is now the second highest ranked recruit in Indiana's 26th class, just right behind Gabe Hill. If you look at Indiana's top two recruits in the class, they are both defensive linemen. So I wouldn't be surprised, or I don't think it's going out on a limb here saying that Indiana's prioritizing the defensive line. You've got a lot of guys. There's more recruits along the defensive front than any other position in this 2026 class. It's clear that's a priority for Kurt Cignetti. That's a priority for Brian Haynes and the defensive staff as well. But even just the first three commitments of July, you look at Cameron McCaney, defensive lineman, one of the top-ranked recruits in Indiana's class. Now, he is the highest-ranked three-star in Indiana's 2026 class. He was a four-star recruit earlier in the cycle before some of the rankings updates. He committed on the first. Walker Bryson, who is the third highest rated three-star recruit in Indiana's 2026 class. He committed earlier this week, and over the weekend, he was the first of two weekend commitments this past week. And then, of course, Ronnell Johnson. It's just, it's not only the fact that these guys are a little bit higher rated. It's who Indiana is beating for these guys. If you look at Walker, if you look at Cameron Mahaney, we'll look at him first. There was a lot of schools in on him. Purdue was one of them, but there was a lot of schools in on him. You look at Walker Bryson, Kansas State was big on him, and Walker Bryson straight from SEC country. That is Georgia. Rabun Gap, Georgia is where Walker Bryson is from. That is the heart of SEC country down there in Georgia.
Have you been there before? What's good to eat?
I have not. I have no idea where that is on a map. I could not tell you.
Kidding.
I have heard it's nice, though. But then you look at Ronnell Johnson. That was Indiana versus Missouri is who that recruitment came down to. And he is a kid from Blue Springs, Missouri. And I got a lot of texts after that Ronnell Johnson commitment, after he announced that he was committing to Indiana. Got a lot of texts from Missouri people that they were a little bit surprised that he ended up leaving the state of Missouri and coming to Indiana, that Indiana was actually able to beat Missouri in that recruitment. There was some surprise, there was some shock on the Missouri side of things when he announced his decision.
I would imagine, because Missouri has been on the rise. They're in the SEC, so they've got that going for them, and they have been playing competitive football. But Indiana also beat Ole Miss. He was just on an official visit to Ole Miss as well. That's a huge win. So you just beat multiple SEC teams. That is giant. And not only that, as you mentioned, you pulled him out of right from under the nose of one of those.
And it's really interesting to see how it's not just kind of one position coach that's really doing this. We've seen on the offensive side, Henry Olinger, we talked about him a lot this offseason, how he is right in the backyard of Ohio State, and Indiana was able to go in and poach Henry Olinger just like that. And that wasn't one of those situations where it was a defensive thing. That was a running back. He's an athlete, probably going to play running back. So it's different position coaches that have been able to do this. We just talked about it on the basketball side of things. You look at Henry Olinger, that's the running back staff that Indiana is able to go out and poach that kid. You look at Ronell Johnson, that's Budo Williams, that's Bryant Haynes, that's the defensive staff that's able to do that. It's up and down the roster. It's not just that Indiana has a good defensive coordinator. Indiana has a good offensive coordinator. They have fantastic position coaches as well. Pat Koontz, Budo Williams on the defensive line. You look at Ola Adams at the defensive back spot, John Miller at running back. And then Mike Shanahan, he's kind of got the double duty of offensive coordinator and wide receiver. Any recruit that I talk to, anybody that I talk to, it's not just the Bryant Haynes of the world. It's not just the Mike Shanahans of the world. It's the position coaches as well. And it goes even further. I've talked to a lot of running backs that have said Justice Ellison, who's only been on the staff for, what, 3-4 months at this point, that he's been a fantastic kind of addition to the recruitment and the recruiting process for a lot of these running backs as well. So it's not just building a staff as far as your head coach, your defensive coordinator, your offensive coordinator are concerned. Indiana's done a great job with that. But it's the position coaches as well, and I think the position coaches often fly a little bit under the radar on the football side of things. But, man, they do a lot of
heavy lifting.
You're exactly right. They've done a fantastic job with helping build out this 2026 class still.
What's next?
It's interesting what's next. Indiana is probably nearing the end of the 2026 class. If you had to ask me, if I had to put an over-under on how many bodies Indiana would have in the 2026 class, they're at 22 right now. If you set the over-under at 23.5, I might take the under. I'm not sure. It's interesting because obviously there's still room for flips. There's still room for decommitments elsewhere. There's still room for decommitments even in Indiana's class, although I'd say that's unlikely. And there's still a couple of targets on the board. You look at Jaquaden Gilford, the kid from Fort Wayne. I think that's still an uphill battle for Indiana. Ole Miss and Ohio State select look like the top kind of targets there. LeVar Keys is currently a wide receiver. He's Penn State. He's committed to Penn State. He took a secret, kind of not so secret visit to Indiana a few weeks ago. I would be surprised if he decommits from Penn State at this point. I think if you're Indiana, you've got kind of two real big-time options left to pick up commitments. That's defensive lineman Cottrell Webb, who was originally slated to announce his commitment on July 4th, will now announce his commitment on July 12th. There's some discussion on whether he'd still be a take for Indiana, considering the amount of bodies they have in that defensive line room. That'd be another defensive lineman in that room. And there's discussions whether Indiana would match the kind of NIL funding that it seems Purdue and Florida State are willing to give out to a high school kid in that sphere. And then the other guy would be Cortez Redding. He's a safety. His finalists include Indiana, Miami, Ole Miss, NC State. So that would be another big major recruiting battle. I think Indiana likes where they're at with Cortez Redding. I think that'll still be a dogfight. I think Miami, NC State are kind of the top two teams so far in that recruitment, but still a long way to go. Redding set to announce on July 25th, so still a couple weeks for that. But I think Indiana is probably nearing the end and kind of nearing rounding out its 2025 class. Only a couple players probably left in that to kind of fill things out.
Well, we'll see. Either way, it's going to be one of the best recruiting classes in the history of Indiana football. Zach Browning from thehoosier.com. Make sure you go there if you don't already. Get a subscription buck for the first month, 50% off for the first year. It is the place to find Indiana basketball, football, news, and recruiting information, as even this latest basketball announcement came via the Hoosier.com on 3. Zach, thanks, buddy. Appreciate you.
Thanks so much for having me, Jim. Always happy to be here.
I look forward to it. And that's going to wrap it up today. We're back tomorrow to do it again. Look forward to it. Go out. Have yourselves a great day. Mike DeCourcy back, trying to get Steve Wildfong on as well. We'll see how that goes. But hope you will have a great day. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.